I'm Todd Zwillick, joined by Catherine Lamfer, in for John Hockenberry and Adora Udoje. Well, should banks be required to explain how they spend taxpayers' dollars? The answer to that's actually a little more complicated than you might think. Well, it was the $700 billion question the Bush administration struggled with last fall when it was constructing the TARP. That's the Troubled Asset Relief Program, in case anyone needs a quick refresher on that. Well, today, as we anticipate the reworked version of the TARP, it seems the Obama administration has a whole new set of questions, like how to restore public faith in that very bailout. To help us answer the question, David Barstow, a New York Times reporter, he's been covering the bailout story, and he's joining us. David?
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Well, the Bush Treasury Department said having banks reveal to the public how they spend the public's money would deter participation. That sounds bizarre, but Obama administration officials haven't necessarily backed off of that notion. It's not much of a confidence builder for those of us who believe in sunlight there, is it?
Well, this is going to be an interesting moment today. The Obama administration has spoken a lot about the importance of transparency, both in a broad way in terms of helping people keep an eye on government, but it has also talked about being more transparent in terms of the stimulus and also with the bailout. But today we're going to really find out how far that transparency goes. What we don't know yet is whether or not the Obama administration is going to demand of banks that get TARP money a kind of complete and thorough accounting of what they did with the money, or whether they're going to be content with a lesser form of transparency. In other words, asking banks simply to give a kind of narrative report of how, you know, what did you do with the money? So that could be a bank sending back a two-paragraph letter that says, you know, we used the $20 billion we got in TARP money to increase lending and help mitigate mortgage foreclosures, and we're using it for a bunch of other purposes. Or will it really be the kind of thorough accounting that will allow us to understand what actually happened to our public dollars?
Yeah, I read that in your piece that the banks might submit a narrative. Made me think of, you know, it was the best of times, or more appropriately, the worst of times for the banks. Like, maybe not that kind of narrative, but the banks have said in the past that full transparency, being transparent to the public about how they're spending the public's money, might actually cause them to not want to participate. Can you walk us through the logic of that from the bank's perspective and help us reconcile it with the public's right to know?
Well, I know what the Bush administration was worried about was, now remember, when this was passed, you know, the financial system was kind of in a full meltdown, and the biggest problem that they were confronting was how do we restore some measure of faith and confidence in the financial system? How do we make sure that we don't create sort of bank runs that really get us into deeper trouble? And what they were worried about was if we make the banks tell the public precisely what they're doing with their TARP money, and a bank comes back and says, well, we didn't actually use the TARP money to increase lending, and instead, really, all we did was we hoarded the money because we had to shore up our own balance sheet. Well, that's a kind of indication of weakness.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this fear that if the banks somehow are frank with the public about the true state of their balance sheets, then that could, in fact, undermine the very kind of stability that policymakers were trying to restore by passing the TARP. And so you run into this tension that has been in the TARP from the beginning between, on the one hand, trying to stabilize banks and inject more capital in them, and yet at the same time saying to the banks, you need to do a much better job of lending and of helping people avoid foreclosures. And what we've seen so far from the TARP is that while, yes, it is true that the TARP money did seem to have an impact in terms of bringing stability to the financial system, there's no evidence yet that TARP did anything to stem the rising tide of foreclosures, nor is there really much compelling evidence that it's done much to stimulate lending. In fact, a lot of newspapers, including ours, have reported on banks that actually decreased lending after they got TARP money.
Okay, David, just listening to you, I have to say, We've heard this morning from people who say that they don't want any bad banks, right? And you're saying that the banks don't want to be franks. So no frank banks, no bad banks. What are we left with here?
That's a very good question. I think we're going to learn a lot more about this at 11 o'clock when Secretary Geithner tries to lay out the Obama administration's vision of how they're going to use the remaining $350 billion, that's what's left, of TARP money to try to leverage money from both the private sector but also from the Federal Reserve to bring to do a number of things that the first tranche of TARP money did not do. And so it seems as though one of the things they're going to try to do in order to restore some measure of trust is that, I mean, they are making, you know, they certainly are saying and have taken some steps to increase the transparency into the program. So, for example, they posted a bunch of the big agreements online between the government and big banks. And they also passed some restrictions or adopted new restrictions on lobbying for TARP money. And, of course, last week they also put some additional executive compensation limits on recipients of TARP money. But there really remains a huge question of, and I don't know that it's been spelled out yet, and this will be a big challenge, I think, for the Obama administration to try to explain something that seems so incredibly complex and, quite frankly, opaque to the, you know, to the public, despite the enormous sums of money that are at risk.
Well, you said in your piece this morning that in the first half of the TARP, the big parts of it, you said opaque, that big parts of the first half of the TARP remain hidden, opaque to government investigators, journalists like yourself, and everyone else who cares to look. So sort of a Rumsfeldian question here, but do we even know what we don't know about the first half of the TARP? There seem like there are questions we don't even know how to ask or answer because it's hidden.
You know, when you talk to the people who are responsible for overseeing this, that's what strikes you the most, is we don't even know what we don't know. When you talk to, for example, Elizabeth Warren,
right, he was just
Congressional Oversight Panel. You know, it's quite stunning to hear them say that at this point they have no idea what really happened to the first $350 billion. Nobody seems to know this. And so it makes it very difficult, never mind the question of whether or not anybody has abused the money or stolen the money or squandered the money. More importantly, from a policy point of view, we don't know whether we did the right thing with the money, whether the use of the first $350 billion and the way we spent it actually made a dent on the main issues that we were trying to repair back in October when this thing was passed.
Or if or if we hadn't done it, things would have been much, much worse. That's one of the arguments that you hear, you know, as much as it appears not to have accomplished what the original goals were, that the cost of doing nothing was potentially much greater, right?
Yes. I mean, I do think that there is fairly general agreement that in passing the TARP bill, what it did do was it did bring a measure of sanity to the financial markets for at least a period of several months. But then, of course, in January, we watched as Bank of America and Citigroup, two banks that had gotten enormous sums of TARP money, began showing signs of weakness again. And so now we're not even sure whether or not that stability we got in the fall is long-lasting or merely temporary.
All right. Well, David Barstow, thanks for joining us from the New York Times to tell us about the bailout. We're going to get more news and more information from the Treasury Secretary, Tim Geithner, later on today. And I think he's also appearing in front of the Senate Banking Committee later this afternoon, correct?
Yes.
All right. Well, David, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
David Barstow from the New York Times talking to us.
We don't even know what we don't know.
It is strikingly Rumsfeldian, but that seems to be the answer. We don't know what we don't know.
Does that mean
about
that someone's going to come up with a bunch of TARP haiku the same way that we had Rumsfeld poetry? Remember that?
Well, we have narrative prose, right? The banks are submitting narratives, or supposed to submit narratives about how to use the money.
I got to tell you, if anything, sounds like a takeaway question to me. What novel would you like to see written out of the wake of TARP?
We could have TARP haikus.
Great Expectations, perhaps?
The producer's writing it down, TARP haikus. Okay, maybe we'll have that in a future show.
Meanwhile, 877-8-MY-TAKE, mytake at thetakeaway.org.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.